chambers. Just as of yesterday, Exxon briefings are now scheduled here at the City Council chambers instead of the larger Valdez Civic Center, where for the first 9 days of the incident, all press briefings were undertaken. The briefing this morning, scheduled to begin in just a few minutes, is the Exxon, daily Exxon briefing. Frank Arossi, the president of Exxon Shipping, Tom Sugliano from their public relations office, and Don Cornett, who's been the spokesman for Exxon, head of their Anchorage office, are all here, along with several members of their technical crew. As usual, we haven't got any advanced word of what specifically will be discussed, although there are charts being put up showing the location of Sheen, the marking of oil beaches, showing where skimmers are located and where various other support craft and elements in the protection effort and cleanup effort are located in southwestern Prince William Sound. Again, much of the activity is now moved further away from Valdez, between 50 to 80 miles away in the Knight Island, Green Island area, down toward Montague Strait. The emphasis again moving toward the southwest sound as the spill is carried by currents and wind in what has been described as the rotational pattern of the oil through the sound. This morning again, Exxon briefing will be beginning in a few minutes for those stations down the line. We will be broadcasting here in Valdez and Cordova through the facilities of KCHU. We're working also to work this jointly with the other station in Valdez, KVAK, and if we're successful, it will be on both stations today. Also, we'll be feeding this to the Alaska Public Radio Network and to stations down the line. Don Cornett of Exxon is approaching the podium now, and I guess the conference will be getting underway.
Okay. I think we'll go ahead and start. We have a new person with us this morning, Suzanne Stolpe, who will be communicating with the press and visitors to the Bird and Mammal Rescue Center. And she just got in and hasn't had a chance to do a lot of counting yet, but she has an announcement that she will make. And then we have Mr. Iarossi. We've invited the Coast Guard, but they have not responded yet, so they may be here and they may not be here. That'll be the extent of it. Thank you. Suzanne?
Just a quick announcement today. I don't have numbers yet, but we'll plan to have them by 2 o'clock. At 2 o'clock today at the Bird and Mammal Rescue Center, we'll be conducting a press tour for anyone who's interested. Dr. Davis and Alice Berkner will both be available at that time for interviews, brief interviews, I might add. As of now, the campus is closed, if you will. We will be only conducting press interviews during the press tour time, which should be at 2 o'clock every day, but I will issue a news release each day with numbers on it as soon as I have them. I don't have them yet today, so I wouldn't expect to get those daily until around noon. It appears that their schedule requires them to spend the morning washing and feeding, and then they start to do their setup for the afternoon. So I'll be meeting with you regularly. If you have any questions at all about the Bird and Mammal Rescue Center, please contact me. I'll be there at the center all the time, so let me know when you need me. Thanks.
Suzanne Stolpe will be a new spokesman for Exxon. Now, Frank Arossi.
On the activity since 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon. As of noon today, we will have transferred over 1 million barrels off of the damaged vessel. The total figure is 1,008,000 as of noon. Of that total, 945,000 is pure oil. So we have 945,000 barrels of that cargo off. We're about at the 94% point as of noon. We've got another 25,000 barrels of pure oil on the vessel, and it is being transferred now. We anticipate we'll have an additional 50,000 barrels of oil, which is mixed with about 600,000 barrels of water. And we'll be skimming that through the night. We'll be decanting, allowing that oil to rise to the surface, and then skimming it off. We'll cease all lightering activities tomorrow morning, Tuesday morning. And at that point, we'll be full swing into the preparations for the refloat of the vessel. Let me update you a little bit about where the oil is today. We had morning flights by both Exxon crews and NOAA crews. They combined their data. If you recall, yesterday there was a large accumulation of oil in this area. Last night, all that oil began moving down through the these passages, and this area is now relatively clear of oil. So all that heavy concentration is now moving out through these passages. The oil concentrations are now just to the east of Night Island and then down into the Montague Straits and out. We have moved our armada of skimmers. They were in this location yesterday. We've left two big skimmers here around Sawmill Bay, and we've moved most of the skimmers up into this area around Snug Harbor, where there's a very large accumulation of oil, and we're trying to trap and skim that oil even before it moves down. The Exxon command and communications vessel is here. That's the Crystal Star. We also have a skimming vessel here, and we're putting up a large deflection boom right at Point Helen, and our objective is to keep this oil moving down the Montague Straits and away from Latouche. The big support vessel, the Exxon support vessel, the Arctic Salvor, is here, and that is our resupply and equipment vessel. We trekked the oil this morning all the way down to Resurrection Bay. It's still 5 to 10 miles offshore, and NOAA is projecting that it will stay offshore. We have been planning for this cleanup. Just give you one aspect of it to show the kind of detail we've gone into it. We recognized from the beginning the safety and health aspects of that cleanup. We brought in two industrial hygienists from Exxon. We also have four industrial hygienists that are on contract. We have one environmental specialist and two safety specialists. So we've got a 9-member team. Their first output is this 18-page document on health and safety of these cleanup activities. These folks have all been out to the sites and float planes. They were working with those small groups that we had cleaning up, trying to learn as much as we could about the hazards of the operation. They also went down coast and into some of the other bays, so they are well familiar with what is ahead of the cleanup crews. They prepared this health and safety document. They also have this 8-page training syllabus, which we're going to be training all the people out in the field to acquaint them with the health and safety aspects of this job. So this is the kind of planning that's been going on behind the scenes to get ready for the major effort. Our activities, we have these two vessels out now on site. We have the first of barges, our berthing and feeding barges. That'll be departing, I believe, sometime today for the site. That's a 56-man barge. It's got a helipad on it, and it has also a big communication system, so it could serve as our backup command and control vessel if we needed it. And that should be on site later today. Our first priority for those crews will be to continue to trap and skim oil that's on the water in these small bays and inlets. And that will be our first priority. And once we do that, then we'll be taking our direction from the interagency committee, which is setting up priorities for shoreline cleanup. I'm ready for your questions.
Is your first attempt at reflotation still Wednesday, 1 p.m.?
Yes. That's what our current schedule is. We'll be We've completed all of the preparations to put an air seal on the tanks. That's been done. We're in the process now of setting up air hoses to all of the different inlets so that we'll be able to control the air to different tanks.
What was the meeting with the Coast Guard in Washington, D.C. today?
I don't know. It's really a meeting with the American Bureau of Shipping, who will then confer with the Coast Guard.
Mr. Onorosi, your comments on reports out of New York that it's quite possible the captain will surrender today?
I don't know that. I stopped reading newspapers and watching TV about 11 days ago because I couldn't handle it. That was the only way I could keep myself concentrating on what we were doing.
Can you address the idea in the paper about leasing a Wall Street
Liner? I'm very happy to hear that, by the way, because we have a lot of questions we want to ask.
Can you talk about this luxury liner that they're leasing out of Washington for your personnel?
I don't know anything about it.
Apparently the Corinthian is coming up from Bellevue, Washington, according to the local newspaper, and it will house 100 of your employees for approximately 3 months.
We do have, I had heard we had a large barge, 100-man barge, but... Okay. Don says it's true.
It's not a luxury liner, it's just a cruise ship that will provide hoteling.
Apparently this has been re-outfitted, and it's considered the ultimate in luxury and elegance, and that's a quote. That's a quote. From the owner.
We do the best we can.
You talked about yesterday about trying to keep the oil in some bays to try to contain it. Can you give us a little bit more description about what bays have been pointed out as a place to put the or push the oil into these coves and bays?
Well, it's there now, and what we're trying to do is trap it to keep it from working its way down coast. There's two very heavily impacted bays. One is Bay of Isles here, but the heaviest is Snug Harbor right here. And we're attempting to keep it there while we skim it. We don't want it moving further down coast.
Okay, one thing on crews, I talked to Job Service this morning. They said VECO told them they suspended hiring at this time until further notice, and that VECO stopped hiring through Job Service on the 28th for cleanup crews. Can you tell us who are they hiring then if they're not going through Job Service?
I think the last hiring was in Chenega Bay. Is that the way you pronounce it?
Chenega
Bay. Thank you. And they also hired from Tetidlik Village. That was about a week ago.
Can you give us the latest on the threats to the hatcheries?
We are moving two of the new skimmers. We had five skimmers come in yesterday. Three went over to the terminal to support the response plan there. And two went to Eshimi Bay just as a protection from that bay. We think the threats to the three northern bays, the three northern hatcheries, are now very, very minimal. The one that we are still working very hard on is Sawmill Bay, and that's been boomed. There's three layers of boom, a big skimmer, and we are flying in 20,000 feet of 43-inch boom. This is a very, very heavy boom, and we're going to be arranging that boom in an outer defense ring. So we're still involved in the protection of Sawmill Bay, and so far that's going well.
And where is the oil in that area reference to those three layers of booms in Sawmill?
The booms are inside. The oil is moving down, primarily the Latouche Passage. There is some oil that came into this area and is moving out, but it's this area here that we're concerned about, and so far that's not been impacted.
No oil up against the booms in Sawmill at all?
Not that I know of.
Reportedly there is, and the only reason it hasn't gone in there is because the wave action hasn't been sufficient to overlap it, but apparently it definitely is pushed up against
yes.
on all sides.
Yes, ma'am.
The hatchery people at Sawmill Bay told me yesterday that they've been trying to get this kind of heavy secret you're talking about for
several days and weren't able to locate it anywhere in this country. They finally found supplies in France and Denmark and were trying to get it to this country. Where did you find yours?
We got it out of the Navy stockpile, 10,000 feet on the East Coast and 10,000 feet in Stockton, California.
From the Defense Department, in other words?
Yes. Through the Coast Guard. The hatchery people had asked us, they had located this boom on from a French manufacturer, and we got right back to them, and it turned out the boom was spread all over about four countries. There was some in Sweden, some in Norway, and it was going to take us, you know, by the time it got here, it wouldn't have done any good. So at that point, we went back to the Coast Guard and again made inquiries, this time through DOD. And they did have this 20,000 feet of 43-inch boom. It's a very heavy boom. It's going to be hard to work with, but we're setting up for it, and we'll be rating it for the fish people.
Mr. Iorossi,
how would you characterize the effort so far? Would you consider it in its infancy stages? How would you characterize it, the cleanup effort?
I think the planning for it, both our own activities and all of the coordination that we've had to have with local agencies, state agencies, and federal agencies has gone very well. It intentionally has been done carefully and thoroughly because we recognize the sensitivity of the cleanup efforts itself. In the past activities, the cleanup has done as much damage as the oil. We're not going to let that happen here, so we're moving carefully, but also rapidly. We'll have our first big team in the field working off of that barge tomorrow.
Mr. Iorossi, last week you said something about working this out with labor unions and making it so it was going to be acceptable. What did you do to have that happen, and did that in any way slow down the beginning of cleanup?
Since day one, I've been a virtual dictator up here. It's been a very uncomfortable position, so I just said this is the way we're going to do it, and that's the way it's been happening. So I think at last count, I don't recall what the split was, but we're trying to make sure that all groups who have labor available, both union, non-union, in the Valdez area, in other areas, and also the different native groups, are being drawn into this cleanup effort. And we have for all of those groups represented in the roughly, I guess it's up to 300 cleanup workers that we have now.
Is there dominance by any one group at this point?
Well, VECO has been the central group for us, and they have been doing all the hiring. We've just helped set some priorities for them. They've been very, very, very responsive to the priorities we've set.
Could you refresh my memory on the contingency plan, what that covered and with what agency that was filed?
There's two contingency plans that come to mind. The first one is the Alyeska contingency plan. Don, maybe you can help as far as the filings. The second is the Exxon Shipping Company contingency plan. I'm most familiar with that. It's in about three or four volumes, about this thick, because we have to cover all of the East Gulf and West Coast, so it's very site-specific. We have different volumes for different areas. The Alyeska plan itself, I understand, I don't know what the agencies are. You'd have to get that information from Alyeska. But I know it is a plan that has review and concurrence. I think it has to be approved by the federal authorities.
And the state also.
And the concurrence of the state or the comments of the state. But I'm not the one to really tell you that information. I quite frankly don't know.
What is Exxon's position on this gag order? Do you mind if people that work for your contractors talk to the press, number one, and do you approve of your contractors dismissing people who do talk to the press or telling them that they will? I think we need to have this very clear for all the people in the community that are working for on Exxon contractors.
No gag order as far as Exxon's concerned. We would not support it. We would not be happy with it. We've attempted to be as open as we can. You know just about everything I know. And you've known it when I've known it. If you were here on day one, you knew what disclosures I made from that point.
All the people that work for your contractors, if we run into them out in the field and we're told that they're not being cooperative with, say, scientists or fishermen or someone, they should answer our questions, right?
You know, we have no gag order. We'll have to talk to VECO and see what their positions are.
Northern Air Cargo, too.
Northern Air Cargo.
That's each company's
choice.
How
much is the cleanup effort costing Exxon? What's your budget?
I have no budget. I have no limit.
Does that mean you have a blank check from Exxon USA to get the cleanup done?
That means my job is to get it cleaned up, and it's my role to do whatever is necessary and reasonable. Doesn't mean I have a blank check. I obviously have to atone for all of this at some point, but there is no limit, there is no budget. We just need to get the job done. Of course, we have to make sure what we're doing is reasonable, and we'll worry about that later.
Speaking of bills, Mr. Iris, speaking of bills, I understood that the state was going to submit some bills today, the first in their billing. Do you know if those were paid?
Well, they certainly will be paid. There are reasonable bills associated with this bill.
Question, Mr. Cornett. How would you characterize relations between Exxon and Alyeska Pipeline right now, given this first full week and a half after the spill? Are they cordial? Are you cooperating? How would you characterize it?
They are cordial business relations. We have suffered no damage to our relationship with the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company that I am aware of.
Is at this point, because of the accusations that are still circulating, whether they be in the paper or elsewhere, the feeling among many Alyeska workers, I'm going to be talking to one this afternoon, is a feeling of bitterness and hostility. And I'm certain that that might show up tonight at the town hall meeting. If you're saying that business relations are normal, how can that be given the climate of this accusations going from company to company?
Well, I'm not aware of accusations passing between Exxon and Alyeska, but I'm also not dealing with the workers over there. I'm dealing with the management, and our relationship is the same that it has always been. We cooperate and try to help each other, but they must defend their response. We have to defend our response and the cleanup. And I have tried in the early days when they were not here to answer as many questions as I could about the terminal, but that really is risky for me to speak for that company. We're a 20% owner, so we've asked them to speak for themselves, and they have been very willing to do that. And I'll be interested to see if there is bitterness developing and what the cause of it is. And let me just say one word while I'm up here about this gag order. We have an awful lot of companies working for us on this project. What they tell their employees is based upon their company policy. If Northern Air Cargo has a policy of instructing their employees not to talk to the press, that is their business, but they're not getting that from Exxon. Okay, thank you.
Yes. Mr. Iris, could you just explain some of the major hazards in refloating and what you're doing to address them?
We have our own people here, three that are dedicated to the refloating operation. We have a contract salvage master, and he has his naval architect with him. That's the second layer. The third layer is we have consultants from Smith Salvage out of Rotterdam. They're here. They also have some equipment staged in Anchorage in case we need help. The American Bureau of Shipping is reviewing our plans. That's the fourth layer. And then the Coast Guard also has to be cognizant and aware of what we're doing. So there are about five layers of review. The strategy that we will be using is to first create an air seal at the main deck of the vessel, and we've already accomplished that. And we have to do it, the way we did it is to take off all of the equipment, or the gauging systems, and the pressure vacuum relief valves that are on the main deck of the vessel, and to put blanks in their place. blanks over all of those openings, so we create an air seal. Then we have special fittings on each tank opening, which in a very controlled way will allow compressed air into the tanks. First thing we did was to pressure up all the tanks using the ship's inert gas system. So at all the tanks, the airspace is now fully inerted. Now we'll be emitting compressed air into the tanks, and that will give us sufficient buoyancy to float the vessel.
Every tank on the vessel, or just ballast tanks? Does that create instability at all?
No, because we do it in a very controlled fashion. There are two big control panels which will be gauging the pressure in each tank, and the salvage master will be playing it like a piano as to how much air he wants in each tank. We're going to, the strategy is once the vessel is up off the reef, it's going to be moved slightly to the south and to the west so we get it off of the ledge. And then we're going to stabilize it in that position, make sure we have everything going the way we want, and then remove it. Right now, the site that we're looking at is outside bay. I'm not sure we have all of the agencies in agreement on that, but we're working that right now.
And the holes inside, are those done? Are those fixed after you move it or before?
We have to move it to a safe haven. The spot we're looking at is outside bay, which is in the southwest corner of Naked Island. And we'll need to, first thing we need to do is get a very thorough bottom survey, and we have three diving teams lined up to do that. They'll give us a very thorough view of what the external hull looks like. We then, depending upon what we learn from that, may put divers into the tanks to do a bottom survey from the inside.
So it's not every tank that you have filled with air, but just the ones that don't have holes in them?
No, it's all the tanks.
How does that work? You got seawater sloshing in and out of these?
Yeah, we've got about a 30-foot head of seawater, so that's covering all of those, all the bottom damage, and then you've got about a 55 foot of airspace on top of the tank. The tanks are 85 feet deep, and we'll have about 32 feet of water in each tank, and of course the bottom damage is the bottom 8 to 10 feet, we believe, is where the damage is limited to, and so you got a very significant water head over the damaged area, and then it's that space of about 50 to 55 feet that we'll be pressurizing in each tank.
Mr. Arasi, you said that you were glad to hear that Mr. Hazelwood may be surrendering himself shortly because you had a lot of questions you wanted to ask him. What questions do you want to ask him?
Well, I think they're all the same questions that everybody else would like to ask him. I have a few personal questions that I'd like to vent, but I don't want to talk about them now.
Let me ask you this then. Are there questions of liability, do you think, or is that settled in your mind?
No, I don't think it's a liability issue. I think it's just all the same questions everybody has as to what went wrong, what happened, what was he doing?
That, unless contingency plans at Alyeska were improved or altered, upgraded somehow, that he might consider closing down the pipeline. What's your reaction to that? Do you agree with that?
I really have no comment. I'm just a little guy in this. There are a lot of other folks who worry about the pipeline.
Mr. Arasi, who is the big guy in all of this?
Well, Alyeska, there is three major companies and a number of minor partners to that group.
Are you satisfied, though, that the contingency plans, you've said that they need to be looked at?
I think with a catastrophe of this magnitude, what we need to do is go back and rethink a whole lot of things. And that process, I'm sure, is starting in some circles already. But we'll have to rethink a lot of things in light of what's happened and what we learned from this.
Do you think that they're in such disarray that the risk of shutting down the pipeline should be...
In my personal opinion, no.
Mr. Iresi, how close contact is the governor keeping with you, or who is he contacting besides DEC?
Well, this senior representative of the governor, as I understand it, is Dennis Kelso, who's here. Dennis and I meet at least once a day. Mr. Kelso, myself, and Admiral Nelson are this three-member steering group, and we meet at least once a day to analyze the day's work, to look at the work plan for the operations coordination group. There's a very big group under us, which is about 12 or 14 agencies involved, and they sort of assess what's going on and plan the next day's work. And Dennis Kelso, the Admiral, and I have primarily been overlooking this and making sure that all the coordination is necessary, that all of the momentum and resources that we can put into this are in fact being put into it.
Okay, you said there were a number of small players. Then who would you choose as the one major player? I mean, there's got to be somebody, hopefully, who's leading this.
As far as the cleanup and response activities,
yes.
That's my job. I'm heading up all the response activities.
Over Alyeska, over DEC?
Well, I really don't have any authority over DEC. What I'm doing is all of the non-government activities. And I'm coordinating with Dennis Kelso for all of the activities that the state groups are doing, and with Admiral Nelson on all of the activities that the federal agencies are doing. So all of the non-government activities are under my control.
You get your feedback then from the governor through Dennis Kelso?
Yes.
Okay.
At least once a day.
You said that 600,000 barrels would be taken out of the vessel yet?
No.
Oily water?
No. Because 10 tanks are holed, there is no way to get the 600,000 barrels of seawater out of the vessel until you patch the holes. We're just sucking the ocean up through the vessel. So those 600,000 barrels approximately will remain in the vessel. And there is some oil content to that, maybe a couple percent. And what we're doing is now for the rest of probably the next 24 hours, we'll be allowing those tanks to decant, in other words, allowing the oil to rise to the surface naturally, and then we'll be skimming off as much of that as we can.
You don't really know how much, and what vessel is that going into?
It's going into the Exxon Baytown, which is alongside now.
That'll be the last one to...
Baytown is the last vessel, and she's going to collect everything we can.
And that'll be done tonight?
Yes, in the Baytown.
Will somebody at Exxon have numbers on how much oil was ended up being recovered, or oily water mixture?
We have 945,000 barrels of pure oil off, and we've got another 25,000 barrels of pure oil to get off. That's coming off now. And then we've got something on the order of 40 to 50,000 barrels, we believe, which is mixed with that 600,000 barrels of seawater. And that will be decanting over the next 24 hours, and we'll be skimming all the tanks to get as much of it off as we can.
Down yes. to like 40-some thousand, and most of that you hope to get out.
Yes.
And do you think you'll have a better handle on what those... I mean, that's a prediction. Now, tonight, it'll be finished, and somebody have some numbers that they can give us for...
By tomorrow's press conference, we'll have all of the final numbers that we're going to have.
So how much oil?
Yes, ma'am.
It's pretty technical. I mean, I know this has been worrying you a lot, this tanker, and to refloat it. But with having to move it, and you want to move to outside bay, whether that's not had a final approval, what's the probability, or is there a probability, of when it's being moved that something could happen to the effect of it going under?
We are very, very confident that we can refloat the vessel and that we can move the vessel to a safe haven in Prince William Sound. And so are all the authorities that have reviewed the plan.
Is there a possibility of it sinking?
I would say as near zero as anything could be.
As near zero as a major spill in Prince William Sound?
We got to get it off the reef. And this is the safest plan, and everybody agrees to it.
What's all been skimmed? Any estimates, new estimates?
I keep asking that question, and I'm told that it's in in bladders and tanks and barges everywhere. We don't have a count, but we're in the process of getting it.
Mr. Iroshi, I heard that Exxon was embarking on a national public relations advertising campaign to counteract the publicity of the spill. Can you comment on that?
I really don't know. I've had all my attention right here. Don, maybe Don can say.
It's a simple letter, one-page ad in the papers from our chairman, saying that he's sorry about it and trying to give the people that live around Prince William Sound in the state of Alaska his personal assurance that the team he has on the ground here is going to do the best job humanly possible. That's what it means. I have no idea.
Has it appeared yet?
I think it has appeared, based on a question I got yesterday after the press conference, I think it must have appeared in some of the national papers, and it is being placed in the Alaska papers. The process is underway now.
One more question about this gag order. Isn't it pretty silly to say that Exxon has no influence over what its contractors say to their employees, since they're hired by Exxon to clean up an Exxon problem and the questions that are being asked are about
the Exxon problem? I don't think it's silly. The companies do a lot more work than work on Exxon's oil spill. Whatever their policy is, we're not going to hire them on to the job and change their policy. If they have a policy that their employees conduct themselves in a certain way, that's their choice. But we have not told them, go tell all your employees, don't talk to the press. I wish they'd keep you talking to them all the time.
And you don't mind if they dismiss them if they do talk to the press, right?
We have not had any part in the dismissal of anybody for talking to the press.
Thank you.
Yeah, but aren't the employees asked to, don't they have to sign a conflict of interest statement before they go to work?
What does that have to do with anything?
Well, wouldn't it be a conflict of interest for them to blast Exxon for something? If there's one.
Oh, why shouldn't they? Everybody else does. Thank you very much. We'll do this again tomorrow.
Do you have a vehicle official here tomorrow? It's kind of hard to get information
sure.
from them.
Sure. We'll have a VECO person.
Don Cornett of Exxon Corporation closing the press conference today, indicating that tomorrow at 11 o'clock, I assume at 11 o'clock, there will be another Exxon briefing. And in response to a request from a member of the press corps, they'll try to get a representative of VECO, the major contractor doing the cleanup. Quite a number of questions from the press regarding alleged gag orders given to the subcontractor employees. Not a lot of new information today. We do have the announcement that 1,008,000 barrels of liquid have been removed from the Exxon Valdez. 945,000 barrels of that was pure oil. There's another 25,000 barrels of oil yet to go. There's also been a fair amount of oily seawater from the tanks that were ruptured. All lightering activity is anticipated to be done by tomorrow. Wednesday at 1 p.m. will be the first attempt to refloat the stricken Exxon Valdez. One of the comments, again in response to a question, evidently some of the slack off in hiring out of Valdez due to the fact that the cleanup personnel have been hired in the villages of Tetetlik and Chiniga out in Prince William Sound. No other press conferences are scheduled today that we are aware of at this time. We will be checking with the DEC, NOAA, the Coast Guard, the NTSB, and other agencies that have at various times done press briefings. If we receive word of any additional meetings to be held, we'll pass those down the line and do our best to broadcast them for you. I want to thank KCHU volunteer Trish King for her assistance in this broadcast. Also to APRN technician Chris Padalek, who's here in Valdez helping us. Back at KCHU studios, James Winchester is on the board. I'm Dave Hammack, and for the time being, from the Valdez Council Chambers, this pretty much wraps up our broadcast for the day. Again, if there are subsequent meetings, we will advise stations, and we will do our best to broadcast them for you. For now, again, I'm Dave Hammack, and this is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.